Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, we've had a good weekend, and as Tara Reid says, just made a cup of tea, opened up the honey, and there was a smiley face. I think it's a good sign for a good week ahead. There's literally a smiley face in this thing.
She's an odd bird. That should be on her business cards. Tara Reid, odd bird.
Sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was a great weekend of basketball. It was okay. There was some fun stuff.
It was eventful.
Yeah, went on.
Yeah, there were events.
Games were played.
Yeah.
James Dolan played with the sure shot.
James Dolan is, God, I love that man.
He's guaranteed to win.
He's everything you want in an owner for a team that's not your favorite team. And I mean that in the most sincere way possible.
He guaranteed a win after the 31-point drubbing at home to the San Antonio Spurs. He went out and played with the sure shot and guaranteed a win the next time they play.
It makes sense. If you can't have your owner guaranteeing victories, I don't know why we're even doing this.
He also apparently met with Mike Woodson.
Yes.
To which I responded, because really, the one thing you know is that if you're trying to fix a situation with the Knicks, the best thing is to get James Dolan involved.
Yep.
So we're going to talk a little bit today about teams that have some question marks, that are struggling early in the season, and we're going to kind of gauge how concerned we should be with them.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm not someone that really likes to get worked up about teams, so this is kind of like right in my wheelhouse. Usually about 25, 30 games, I start thinking, well, that's something we should maybe worry a little bit about. And then if it's, you know, a problem after 60 games, it's, well, maybe they should start gearing up for the draft.
You go right from well, there might be some concerns, but really, let's not overreact, right to, well, that was a bad season. Like, you just jump right there to the end.
I'll write it out till about game 80, and then I'm like, yeah, you're 20 under. Yeah, you probably should have done some different things this year.
Don't become an astronaut, okay? You and I are on like the opposite ends of the spectrum. I would be like, oh, God, the air conditioner's not working. Eject! Bam! Out. Like, 30 seconds. Yeah. We haven't even left yet. I would be ejecting from the seat.
I would just be like, I don't know. It's pretty cold in space anyway. We don't need an air conditioner.
Yeah, well, and then you're like, huh, we're out of oxygen. I'm sure I'll be fine. Something will make some more. I'll adjust. It'll be fine.
I'll find a plant. I brought a plant up with me.
There's lots of plants in space, right? That's how science works.
It's a little warm in here. I'm going to crack a window.
Knicks fans, I can hear you already like curling your fists of rage up at me and snarling. I'm going to shock you right now. I have come to the conclusion that everyone's concerns about the Knicks are a little bit overblown.
I agree. Now, I don't think we should pretend they're playing well, which I know you're not going to do. Like, you can't say like, oh, just a couple of things have gone wrong here and there. Like, there are some legitimate problems, but they're not problems that I think will be there consistently throughout the season.
It's not like you can be like, well, if they just tightened up a few things, that 31-point loss really would have been a single possession game. You know, it's so. Let's start at the end and go backwards. How about that? The Spurs are one of the best teams in basketball, and they absolutely destroy you if you do not have your head together. So missing your best defensive player in Tyson Chandler, not having a lot of your rotations figured out because you've got some new personnel, having Andrea Bargnani and not having figured out a way to mask that, and having J.R. Smith in his first game back, in an early game on Sunday, all of this to me is like, It looks so bad on the surface, and I started to watch it last night, and I only really watched the third quarter because that was all I really thought like I needed to see because it was such a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
I mean, Iman Shumpert was horrible yesterday.
Yeah, and I would imagine – I've never done it before. I would imagine defending Tony Parker, even if you're a good defender, is not an easy task.
Yeah, but
– And I can see how that would throw your – because – I think especially with young defenders, you can get into this trap of, all right, I should be like, my job is to lock this guy down. He's still working me. This isn't going well. On the other end of the floor, maybe I should do more to make up for it. And then you start pressing, you know, if that makes sense. You start rushing through things, you start not making good decisions because now you're worried that one end of the floor needs to be made up on the other end.
I think a lot of it is, for me, is with Shumpert. It's not really when he was guarding Parker. It's all the other times he was just freelancing in the most stupid of ways. He was just all sorts of decisions where you're like, you absolutely cannot do that. You know, you cannot overstep to the corner. Like, if you're in the corner and you want to make a half-hearted, like, oh, I'll try and push Parker a little bit more to the middle instead of to the baseline, that's fine. You still have to stay within about a step to reach a Danny Green. You just have to.
And
you can't jump the screen when he's not your man and while Danny Green is looping to the outside.
You know, I'm not an NBA coach, so I don't really have an answer to this question, but I feel like basketball still has the same basic tenets defensively that it's had for, I don't know, the last 15, 20 years. And it's like one is help defense, where you just don't leave the strong side shooter in the corner. Like that's been hammered into my head that, you know, when I coached JV basketball briefly, like that was an ideal in the program. Like you don't leave that shooter. You can leave from the weak side, you move into the middle of the floor, it's help defense, you recover, but you don't leave the strong side shooter. And then, I mean, it happened a lot in that Knicks game, and I just feel like it happens a lot in general, and I wonder how much of that is maybe it's a different philosophy in the NBA because it is such a much more complicated game and there's so much more talent, or maybe it's guys just thinking, well, I'm a great athlete, I can recover.
I wonder if a lot of it is the whole, like, you got to make a play. You got to make a play. Yeah. Be a guy that makes plays. I think back to actually Raheem Morris and the Broncos last January. When, like, his idea was, oh, I'm going to go up and make the game-saving interception. And the reality was, I'm going to allow the game-losing touchdown.
Right.
Like, don't do that. Like, there's times when you just need to be sound, and I think teaching that to young guys. And Shepard's still young. It was really surprising to see such a good defensive player take such a drastic step backwards. But really, you could point to anybody. I mean, nobody.
Yeah, the entire system was out of whack Sunday against the Spurs. And that was the thing. Like, I think you asked me later in the day. You're like, "What happened to the Knicks?" I was like, "Just a bad game. Like, they played an early game and it was bad. Like, really bad. Like, and I don't know that you can point to like, oh, Carmelo's not doing enough, or oh, this team is terrible, or anything like that. It's just like sometimes you just have a mid Sunday game, and maybe you stupidly were out too late the night before. I don't know what the reasons were, but sometimes the energy just isn't there.
I mean, you know my feelings on it offensively, which is they're never going to be consistently successful because of their reliance on isolation. Like,
sure.
I don't believe that that's ever going to be long-term a viable strategy. I think that it worked. I mean, a really big key to this is where you stand on was last year's turnover performance sustainable or not? That's like a big question, I think, to me.
Right.
Is they were so low last year, and they were consistently low the entire year. And so the question is, Was that like who they are? Was that sustainable, or was it they happened to have things? It was one of those years when things went right for them in that regard, where they just had a really great year at not turning the ball over. And now that they've kind of slipped backwards, that's causing a lot of issues. Because, I mean, I do think that's a key. If you're going to run the system that they do, which is isolation then kick out, you cannot turn the ball over.
Right. I mean, they're still near the top of the league in. I think they're, I don't know, like sixth or seventh in turnover rate.
Yeah.
But they are, I don't know, 2.5 percentage points worse than they were last year. And that could
just
be.
It was that they were so freakishly low last year.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, they were like 13% last year. And they're in the mid-15s now, I think. And that's, you know, you can still be relatively good compared to the rest of the league. But that 2% can, you know, that can screw with your entire offensive identity. So, I mean, if they don't get that under control, I actually think this is where you're going to laugh a lot at me. I actually think J.R. Smith's presence will calm that down a bit, just for the simple fact of you can think the heat checks are turnovers, and I'm fine with that idea. But a shot is better than a turnover every time, right? And
he's turning the ball over if you're shooting.
Right. That's Nick Young's philosophy. Like, he doesn't turn the ball over, he doesn't get assists, but he gets shots up. And there is value to that, and I think that, you know, maybe J.R. Smith being back, you have another guy that can create for himself. He doesn't pass all that much. You know, that maybe that helps correct a high usage guy like that. Maybe that helps correct that problem. Now, I don't know that means the offense gets fixed, but maybe at least the turnover problem gets fixed.
How much of the people really want to attribute the turnover thing to Kidd? And I don't know whether that's accurate or not. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying I don't know. I don't know. I know that Kidd made a lot of smart passes last season, but I also know that he gradually took less and less a role in the offense because he, you know, became 40.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure it's a factor. I don't know how much of a factor it is. Like, Raymond Felton is going to be a little bit sloppier with the ball, but it's also probably better long term to have him involved in the offense because he's such a good pick and roll scorer that, you know, maybe you give a little bit there, but I don't know. I don't know that Kidd is that big of a deal in that department enough to make, you know, everything fall apart.
Raymond Felton this year, 75 points, 80 shots.
Yeah.
It's been really rough. It's been a really rough start for him, and I think that's got a lot to do with it. He's now missing his best weapon in Tyson Chandler. I've always liked their sets together in the pick and roll.
Yeah, they're always really good together.
But the Bobcats loss, I actually think it's not a good loss, but it's not as bad of a loss as everyone makes it out to be. The idea is that, oh my God, you lost to the Bobcats. And I'm kind of like, this Bobcats team right now is okay. It's not great. It's okay. They lost them without Al Jefferson, which is not good. But the Bobcats, I've seen them do this too many times over the years. They just sneak up on teams. Everyone thinks they're so awful all the time.
Well, especially early on in the season. We saw it from last year. They were like, what, 5-2? And then they completely fell apart. Like, there are certain teams that are so bad or are supposed to be so bad that you just don't take them seriously to begin the year, and it ends up being a stupid mistake that can actually cost you in the standings in seeding later on. But that's just like we see that all the time.
Yeah. The Timberwolves loss is completely acceptable. The Timberwolves are a better team.
Yeah. And I mean, right now. Yeah, they are right now. Towards the end of the season, probably not. But right now, they definitely are. And you look at that, the Timberwolves were up huge and they fought back. Like, moral victories are kind of a dumb, like, Disney movie idea, but there is at least something to say, like, all right, we lost the game, but we have fight. We didn't just give up. And you know, that's what that game was for them. Now, who knows how much they actually take from that or if they even view it that way, but I think there is value in that.
And then the Bulls' loss is completely acceptable. Like, that's a completely acceptable loss.
Yeah, they played an absolutely ugly game, and Derrick Rose finally made a shot.
It Bulls home opener, they almost won.
Yeah.
So, you know, one loss, you know, all three losses outside of yesterday are acceptable. The loss yesterday, you chalk up to a bad game. You got three acceptable losses in a bad game. The Bucks win wasn't impressive. I think that's maybe the bigger concern for me is they don't have an impressive win. They don't have anything to point to and go, yeah, but look what they did in this game. Because the Bucks win was opening night. I don't think the Bucks are very good, and the Bucks climbed back into that game after a huge deficit. So like they left off the pedal, and that happens.
Yeah,
it just wasn't an impressive win. It was fine. It just wasn't an impressive win. The Bobcats win was solid, but it kind of gets the luster taken away after they whipped you in your own house a couple days before.
Right. I mean, it's good to see you respond like that.
Yeah, but
you shouldn't have. You also shouldn't have to respond.
Yeah, so they don't have a signature win. They've got the Hawks next. I think they can beat the Hawks. The Hawks' defense has been so bad that I think that they've got a good shot against the Hawks. The Rockets, I think, are probably a bit much for them right now.
Yeah, the Rockets, you still see some awkwardness there, right?
Yeah.
Which we expected. I think we talked about that probably 3 or 4 times leading up to the season of we think they're going to be really good, but it might take a bit. And so it's trying to figure out which version of the Rockets will show up, but you don't know which version of the Knicks will show up. Like, are they going to be, you know, a 3-point destruction that just, you know, that actually ends up liking the way the Rockets play in that game, or are they going to be the mess we saw against the Spurs on Sunday? You know, it's kind of a, I don't think it's necessarily a measuring stick, but it's something you want to keep your eye on.
Somebody mentioned this to me on Twitter this morning. What if they fire Woodson and bring in George Karl?
I would actually love that. I don't know that Carmelo would. I would love that.
Karl would not. I feel confident Karl would not take that job.
I don't think he would either, but that would be awesome.
Carl would say, life's too short. That would be George Carl. The other one I had, though, I mean, look, Mills has been installed as general manager, but is he really in charge? And so I keep coming back to, it's not too late. Call up Phil. Give him the whole operation.
Why wouldn't you? You're throwing money around regularly anyway.
You want to up Prokhorov? Go get Phil Jackson.
Yeah. Don't let Prokhorov get Phil Jackson. Like, I know that they love Billy King and all that, and he's done a fine job assembling that roster, but that would be a big FU to Prokhorov of like, hey, we got Phil. You couldn't get him, we got him. And he'd take it. He would absolutely take that. Get a chance to rebuild the Knicks. He loves the Knicks.
I have a better idea.
Isaiah?
Coach and GM.
I don't know that you want him coaching. I think like Isaiah was a decent coach, I guess. I feel like once you buy the groceries, you don't always want to see that meal through. Sometimes you just want to walk away and go to dinner.
See, and my first thought was, like with Isaiah Thomas, sometimes when you buy the groceries, you don't want the cook to come in and then set the entire building on fire while holding wild sex orgies while the entire building burns down. That would be
right.
Where I would get to.
Here's a good idea, though. Isaiah takes over, new player development coach, Stephon Marbury.
Oh, so good. So good. He's got a whole program, a series of videos called Get Out of the Trunk.
they install a new offensive system they call a sex truck.
So we'll talk about the Rockets in a minute. Give me, is there a team that's good that you're worried about?
You
think the Clippers defense will come around, right?
I mean, I'm a little, yeah, I think that, well, I think it'll come around enough. Like, I don't think they're going to be a top 10 defense at all, but I think they're going to be fine in terms of getting the seed they need for
right.
In the West, like a top 3 seed. I think they'll be fine in getting that. And then you just really need to, you know, you need to tighten up enough for the playoffs. I trust Doc Rivers in this situation, even if the personnel doesn't necessarily match up right now. You know, I guess I'm a little worried about the Grizzlies. And I'm a little – the Bulls just still look so bad. I mean, they blew out Utah, but everyone's blowing out Utah. So
yeah,
like,
golf clap for you.
Yeah, like, you know, like
– my power rankings, which came out today, it was, hey, you blew out Utah. Here's a cookie.
Yeah, right. And so that's – I would say those two teams I'm most – well, no, I am concerned with Brooklyn.
Yeah, I was just about to say, man.
Yeah, they just don't look good, and that could be a Rockets thing, like we were talking about. Like, they may just need time to gel, but God, the other night, Pierce and KG looked so bad.
Yeah, I was about to say, time is kind of the problem here.
Yeah.
Because you thought KG was retired last year. He's dead now.
I'm just waiting for zombie KG to pop back up. I love zombie KG.
Like, Nene whipped him. Nene whipped him.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Like, on the glass, whipped him. And I was like, oh. Like, it's one thing when it's Vucevic and it's like, okay, the kid's like, he's like, what, 22?
And he's probably got 40 pounds of muscle on KG.
He's
like,
got 40 pounds on him. He's an ox. I mean,
yeah.
Vucevic is a physical beast.
Right.
Right? And Nene's a big old boy, but KG is, he's KG. Only he's not KG. He's just, oh, KG.
Yeah, he was KG.
Pierce.
Now, he was KG. Now he's just Kevin.
Pierce looks physically. Pierce has been, outside of the last game, Pierce has been better. Pierce, actually, I'm really impressed with, because it looks like Pierce basically spent the offseason not doing what he usually does, which is hanging out in Vegas and eating cheeseburgers, and like really came into season in shape. Like,
yeah.
He looks fantastic. I'm really impressed with how Paul Pierce looks. Jason Terry has looked marginally alive.
Yeah.
I guess the idea is once Darren has, quote unquote, platelet therapy, and by that I mean 6 cortisone shots, everything will be fixed. That's kind of the idea, right?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is, we mentioned last week, right, that hey, Brook Lopez is their best player. That's fine. I like Brook Lopez. He's a really good player. He's, I think, still pretty underrated amongst like people who claim to love the NBA. Brook can't be their best player long term. You know, like I mean, I'm talking like long term in terms of the season. Throughout the course of the season, Deron Williams has to show he's easily the best player on this team. Like, not even like up for discussion. No matter how well Brook Lopez plays out there, Deron Williams has to be the leader and he has to be the best player on the floor almost every night. And the ankle's just, I mean, I wonder, like his strength has always been that he's a quick guy at his size. So he can kind of Paul Pierce guys, right? Like the way Paul Pierce used to get around guys, like Deron Williams can just like strong arm them. Or maybe he's like the Carmelo Anthony of point guards in the sense that like he can be so physical that it's overpowering for his position. But I almost wonder at this point, like, should he go completely like paleo? Should he try to drop 25, 30 pounds to put less stress on his ankle? I mean, because clearly the ankle's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're adamant that it's like, oh, it's going to be fine. It's just like an ankle, but it's been so long now.
Yeah, maybe it will be fine, but until we see it consistently be fine, it's, you know, I don't know. It looks bad.
The Nets are giving up 107.6 points per 100 possessions with Garnett on the floor.
That is the opposite of what they wanted him to do.
They're giving up 115 with AK on.
God.
It's just 53 minutes, but...
I mean, they'll probably get to a point where everybody gels. I think that's the plan. I mean, I know that's the plan, but I think that's like a possibility. And maybe it takes 15, 20 games. What do you put the odds at that we're still going to be concerned with them mid-January?
20%.
Yeah, I was going to guess like 25,
30. I'd put 20%. There's just too much talent. There's a point in the NBA where the talent just... The difference, though, I think for me is they can start winning games, but they gotta look a lot better, a lot faster. They have to be really... Like, I judge teams differently. Like, the Wizards are starting to get together, and they look fine. Like, yeah, they look about where they're going to be, which is they're going to lose to some good teams. They're going to hang with some good teams. They're probably going to have a few off nights with some bad teams. But in general, they're going to get themselves right. Like, the Wizards record doesn't look good right now. I really sense Beal shook off whatever it was that was bothering him. They're fine. They just need Bradley Beal to be good.
That Bradley Beal is good. That kid can... He could just score the ball. Like, he's flat out good.
I love watching him play.
Yeah, he's fun.
I think another thing we probably need to – this one actually is – because this was a coin flip to going into the season. The Cavs.
Yeah. They're not going to be this bad on offense all year, right?
I mean, Mike Brown's coaching him. How could they?
No, but they've got offensive weapons. Hey, you know what Tristan Thompson should do? He should go back to being left-handed on offense, except for when he's at the free throw line.
Yeah, such a good opening game. I'm so sad. I was all excited for the year of Tristan, and then no.
Who did they go against in the opening game? Brooklyn?
Yeah.
There you go.
He went up against KG.
Right. Exactly. He went up against Kevin. We can't call him KG. We can't call him KG anymore. He went up
he's
against
just Kevin.
He's just Kevin now. I can't, in good conscience, call him KG.
You know, Waiters had a good game last time. But it's still, you know, every night it's a question mark on more points than shots. And he's such a big part of the offense. That's another thing that bugs me is, like, I really just want Waiters to spot up. Just, like, that's the difference. As Cavs fans think I don't like Deion Waiters and I want him to fail so that I'll be right. I want Deion Waiters to just play off ball. Be a shooter that cuts. If you are a threes and D guy in this league, you can make a lot of money. You don't have to be an on-ball dominant guard.
It is
you don't have to do that.
It is funny how much how different it is. Like, when he cuts to the basket and gets the basketball, I feel so much better about it than when he drives to the basket.
Yep.
And
exactly.
it's not that different of a thing, but there's a rhythm with him that it's not that he doesn't look comfortable when he drives to the basket. It's just that he looks maybe a little panicked, if that difference makes sense, you know? Like,
yep.
Oh, I've got to get this shot up on the rim rather than you're just kind of reacting when you cut.
Well, I think a lot is that he's looking at three defenders. because everyone knows what he's doing.
Right.
You wrote about this. You know, you did a great breakdown of Paul the other day, and it talked about how, like, Paul's using the attention drawn by everybody else, and he's killing you no matter where your attention is drawn. If you pay attention to his weapons, he's taking you one-on-one. And if you focus on him, he's passing to his killer shooters. And that's what you need to do. Is like, you need to keep the offense off balance. I saw Melo yesterday, to get back to the Knicks, like, one, Raymond Felton was standing at, like, half court in a – it was a half court set, and Felton's just hanging out.
I saw the screenshot. Like, he was seriously 40 feet from the basket.
I was like, what the hell is Raymond Felton doing? And he's got the strong side shooter, but the Spurs are actually going to stay home on him. He's got a weak side shooter, though. If he drives, he's going to have an awesome open kick out, right hand, you know, kick out to it. He goes one on three, and because they hedge correctly, they force him inside, and he has to do an underhanded reverse layup that hits the bottom of the rim. And it's like, when you have, don't try and beat three guys. Like,
right.
You can. I'm not saying you can't, but if you're struggling, you might want to go to something else. And that's how I feel with waiters. I'm like, you might just try working off ball. This isn't going to work out well for you. Maybe the thing is Varejão. Maybe he can get better. The thing with Bynum is pretty concerning, actually, because it's like Bynum looks awesome when he's on the floor, but then Bynum gets off and he's like, I feel like crap.
Yeah, it's like he gets off the floor and it's like, all right, I can't go back out. I'm good. Like, things got cold. I can't do it anymore.
I mean, I think that covers it. The Rockets, I'm actually not as worried about. The Rockets, to me, really right now, I firmly believe this. Like, they're going to struggle defensively because they are still trying to put a scheme in place, and you see a lot of this where guys are not trusting Dwight to be back there. They're just not used. It takes a lot for you to tell an NBA player, hey, if your guy gets past you, it's okay.
Right.
Like, don't worry about it. It's all right. Like, it takes a lot. We were talking about this, and it's kind of the same principle, right, with like Shumpert, where versus having Dwight Howard behind him, he's got Andrea Bargnani. So maybe he's got a point in, I need to make sure we try and deter this drive. But the Rockets are leaving a lot of three-point shooters open because they're trying to cover up on the perimeter and not staying home on shooters. And I feel like the more that they get used to, oh, no, Dwight will just simply eradicate this if he tries to drive.
Yeah.
They'll get better at that.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is it's going to take time to learn that trust of I can be a more sound defender. I don't have to do as much because we have Dwight behind us in – you know, at times we have Omer Sheik back there. Like, that's going to be good enough throughout the course of a game. I'd like to see, you know, Beverly healthy, like really, really healthy, and being able to pressure the ball a lot more than he has been. And, you know, maybe, I mean, James Harden's not a good defender. He's an atrocious defender. But maybe he was so bad the other night because he had that bruised foot. Like, I don't really know when the injury occurred or anything, but it was kind of funny that the next day, maybe they're covering for it, or maybe it's a legit injury, I don't know. But the next day, after he looked maybe the worst he's ever looked on defense, there's news that he's got a bruise in his foot. You know, and that if it's true, that would explain why he was so bad.
Offensively, I'm frustrated with them because they're just not – they're going away from all the things that make them good. Like, when they – I did a breakdown. When they run pick and roll, they're nearly unstoppable. You have to help, and when you help, they kick, and then they're open. And if you don't help, you've got Dwight one-on-one rolling to the rim, and it's just an easy lob. And if they peel back on Dwight, you've got an open jumper for Lynn or Harden, and that's right. And there's all you have to do is run sets, but instead they're running so much ISO. They're just, I'm going to dribble up, and then I'm going to dribble for like 10 seconds, and then I'm going to dribble into the teeth of the defense and then try and kick. And I understand the drive and kick concept, and that's good, but no one's coming to help because they have you covered because they can see, like, I can guard you well enough one-on-one. Like, Harden's still going to get his points, but I feel like they're wasting possessions and not getting everybody involved, and that's
– yeah.
That, I think, is something they got to work through.
I think the encouraging thing with them offensively is they're second or third in true shooting percentage, and the fact that you can still be that high while Dwight's shooting less than 50% on 10 free throws a game – you know, that they're, you want them to get better offensively for sure, because they're a little bit worse than they were last year, but still they're converting a high percentage of shots, you know?
Yeah.
It's just their turnovers are out of control. They turn the ball over 18.9% of the time. That's got to go.
I'm really mad at Memphis for that win against the Warriors.
You're mad at them because they won?
Yes, because that was such a like that win against the Warriors was so much of an unexpected. It was like, you know, if they lost that game, it'd be like, all right, we're really in trouble. Like, there's got to be some changes either schematically or personnel or something. And instead, like, they just whipped the crap out of the Warriors, just beat the living hell out of them. I think they were on a back-to-back, but still, like, I mean, friend of the program, Ethan, like, tweeted, like, I don't know why people are freaking out at the Grizzlies. Still look pretty good to me. and yeah, they did, Bogut, but they also shot well. The Warriors were helping off of Mike Miller. I don't know why you would do that. He's the only guy that can shoot.
Yeah, they did. They shot really well. I mean, that Warriors bench is so bad on offense. I really believe like they should be starting Iguodala and Harrison Barnes together and bringing Klay Thompson off the bench just to balance it more.
I support you now on that.
Yeah. You gotta have some kind of scoring off the bench, and it's not that Klay isn't good enough to be a starter. It's just that, you know, maybe it's too cliche to throw him. Or to throw this name around as much as we do, because we use it for every scorer who comes off the bench, but he kind of has to be a Manu Ginobili in a way, just from the terms of scoring, or maybe Jason Terry is a better example. But they just you can't have 8 minutes a game when that unit is out there together, in which they don't have any offense. Like, that's just, you can't survive. Not that they're in trouble or anything. I just think, like, you can provide so much better balance to their team.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, the Warriors look amazing. They're number two in power rankings this week, and I almost put them number one over the undefeated Pacers. That's how good I think they've looked despite the losses. Like, I just,
their defense is crazy good.
So, I mean, they're just, no complaints there.
I'm worried about the Pacers.
How so?
Going 82-0 is really going to tire them out. They're not going to be ready for the playoffs.
This team is just kicking so much ass right now.
Oh my God.
They're so confident in it too. Like, there's, you know, they get down and they're not like, they get down double digits and there's no like not even like a little bit of frustration. They're just like, it's fine. Just wait.
Yeah.
It's coming.
And that I wrote about something. You wrote about them, saying, you know, you got on this kick and you're right that you know, they've got to be more of a national product, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't understand how. I don't know how you go to the conference finals, push Miami to seven games. Roy Hibbert is likable and marketable. Paul George is likable and marketable. George Hill, to a certain extent, likable and marketable. David West is likable and marketable. And they are on television, national television, 10 times a season, not NBA. Yeah.
I mean, I do get it because of the ratings aspect. I do think, like, let's assume they go to the conference finals this year and lose to Miami again in an awesome series. Going into next year, like, they need 20 games. Like, at that point, they're becoming a commodity, and even if the local market isn't drawing in, you and I have talked about this in many respects of life. If you have a good product that you can't sell, then you're just bad salesman.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the area we'd be getting into with the Pacers going into next season. I understand it for this year. But going into next year, it's going to be a thing where you have to sell this product.
The difference as I've gotten older is this. In the past, I would have done what a lot of fans do, which is to say, why are they on television 10 times and the awful, horrible, no-good Lakers are on television 25 times? And now I understand. I'm like, no, the Lakers have to be on television 25 times. They're always going to pull in ratings. They always will. The Knicks always need to be on television. The Bulls always need to be on television. Those teams need to be on television. The Lakers, the Bulls, and the Knicks have to be on television if they have any business being there at all. If they are not a lottery team, they need to be on national television 20-plus times. I get the idea, which was Denver was good last year, and you don't want to punish a team prematurely, but you really should have seen this coming with Denver.
God, they're bad. And now with JaVale McGee out, indefinitely. I mean, who knows how long that'll last. Maybe it's a couple weeks, maybe it's a couple months, but the J.J. Hickson starting center is looking mighty fine right now.
I think based on the lineups, based on what we know, I think he's going to go with Fareed and Mozgov. I think he's kind of admitted, Shaw has admitted defeat with the Fareed thing, where he's like, I would rather have a back-to-the-basket guy, but since I don't have one,
yeah,
I have to recognize that Fareed's better. And Fareed and Mozgov have actually, I think they're plus 9.6 per 48. It's one of the few lineup combinations that works for them.
I think that that's the play, and I don't actually I don't doubt that they won't start that, but how long are they going to go with that in a game? Are they going to go 25 minutes? Or are they going to go 12?
They're going to go 12, and then there's going to be a lot of they're going to play Hickson at five a lot, and it's going to get well. I'll say this: he likes the combo of putting Darrell Arthur at fifth and then putting Hickson at four, and those numbers actually aren't terrible. That actually works okay. The problem I have with that is that it winds up making J.J. Hickson look good when in reality. It's Darrell Arthur that's doing most of the work defensively there.
Yeah. Oh, back to the Pacers real quick, though. It's funny that, like, it's like, oh, they're so improved. They're still a middle-of-the-road offensive team, but that's all they needed.
Yeah.
That's really all they needed. Like, they don't need to be a good offensive team. They just need to be not terrible. And the additions to that bench have been so good that I think I wrote something, a brief little thing, because they had comments about, no, we want the top seed. You know, we don't want a game seven on the road again. They had that following their win over Brooklyn. Is that right? I can't remember who they beat on Saturday, those were the comments. And I looked at it and was like, okay, last year their bench was the worst shooting bench in the league. This year they're like the seventh or eighth best.
Yep.
Like that's enough improvement to make them an elite team.
I looked at some stuff in that piece for Saturday, which looked at where they're shooting from, and there's been a very subtle shift to – and they started this in the series against the Knicks, actually. It was really kind of amazing. It was like the Pacers all season long had offense, and then were basically – they looked at themselves in the mirror and said, if we're going to miss shots, why don't we take more threes to make up for the ones that we miss?
Yeah.
And so – they've lowered some of their stuff at the rim, but mostly they've lowered it – well, not mostly. As much they've lowered it in the mid-range area, and they converted those into threes. And that's helping them a lot. And conversely, you know, I talk about volume. They're allowing – they are ninth in defending the three-pointer in terms of percentage, and they allow the 23rd most – three-pointers per game. So they're letting you shoot a low volume at a low clip.
Yeah.
That's and really in this NBA, that's like if you have a rim protector and you guard the three, you will be a good defense.
Yeah.
You don't even have to have great interior rotation. One guy can make a difference. That's why it's so valuable.
Somebody, this is an extreme example, but I made some joke about Chris Kidd because the Lakers and Timberwolves played last night and I was watching it, obviously. And I made some joke about, oh, Chris Kaman can have that jumper all day. Like, here's hoping he takes it all day or something like that. And someone was like, well, based on his percentages this year, that's not a good idea. I said, he can have 25 of them. He can have 25 mid-range jumpers in this game. He's like, well, he'll hit 13. I was like, right, and they won't have an offense.
Yep.
It's like, you give teams mid-range jumpers over anything else, any coach in the league would take that right now, except for Doug Collins. Oh, right, he's not in the league anymore.
Which is funny because you say Chris came in and let him have it, and all I can think of is how much he let Kevin Love shoot last night.
He let him shoot a lot.
Sat there, watched him.
So much so that Kevin Love was up 18-16 at one point on the Lakers.
Like, I understand that it's hard if you're a center. You don't want to extend because you're worried about getting beat. But I don't know how to get to guard Kevin. You have to guard Kevin Love on the perimeter. Like, I don't know how else do I explain this.
And
then they tried putting Wesley Johnson on him.
Oh my God, that's just when they're out of options, right?
I don't know why Jordan Hill wasn't guarding him from the start. That would have been the matchup I would have gone with consistently. Love still would have torched him, but he wouldn't have been open.
Right. Love would have just like probably drawn more fouls or something because you can't draw fouls against Chris Kaman because he's nowhere near you.
Right. Have you seen the J.R. Smith gif this morning?
It's like if you show a cat a ball of yarn, but you're like 10 feet away and it starts like pawing at it just because it's like, oh, yarn. I know I'm supposed to paw at that. Like that's what that defense was like.
It's like an optical illusion.
Yeah.
You want to do games?
Let's do games.
Pretty good slate tonight. So over the weekend, by the way, I went one game under 500. I managed to stay alive. I'm under 500 for the weekend just because of that Boston Celtics ridiculousness, which has me all sorts of annoyed. I had to basically take Sunday to clear my head because I started getting way too annoyed. Like Saturday, I started getting way too annoyed at teams that I don't think are very good winning and had to get back to, Matt, they're going to all win about 19 games a season.
Three straight wins for your Boston Celtics.
they're, you know, the Celtics, and hey, the Celtics may wind up winning 25 to 30 wins. Like, that's possible. They could win 38. That's just because I think that they're horrible doesn't mean that they are. Who knows what I know? But I had to get past, like, because it was like all sorts of ridiculousness. Wade tried to miss a free throw, only he missed it too hard, which allowed them to get the timeout.
Why? I mean, all right, I get it. I really get it. Like, if he pulls that off, it's, oh my God, what a savvy veteran. Like, if he hits the back iron and it comes to him and he ticks off the final 0.6 seconds of the game, everyone's like, oh my God, what a brilliant play. Like, that's Dwayne Wade, you know, he's still got it, blah, blah, blah. But just shoot the free throw.
Just shoot it.
Like, you can try. Actually, a funny thing is Friday night, I was watching Monte Ellis warm up, like, I don't know, 45 minutes before the game. And he missed 6 straight free throws at one point, which would be odd. But you could tell, like the first one he missed so badly, I was like, what the hell? Like, all Monte Ellis jokes aside, like, the first free throw he missed so badly that you can't even imagine a player like him doing that. And then I recognized, like, the third one in, he was intentionally missing it on each side of the rim back and forth. And I don't know if it was like an end of game thing or if it's just like a, hey, let's see if I can aim for this spot on the rim because then, you know, that shows I have this kind of control over the ball. I don't know what it was, but he was intentionally missing free throws. But he wasn't chucking it at the backboard. He was just shooting it. And, like, I feel like Dwayne Wade, he's a pretty good free throw shooter, but you just shoot it normally. Someone's going to get someone's going to tip it. Like, someone's going to get that clock going. Don't throw it at the backboard.
Here's a weird thing for me. If, you know, NBA players, if you shoot a good percentage on something, it's like 45%, right? That's from the field.
Right.
The free throw line, if you hit 2 out of 3, right?
Sure.
If you have that much trouble making a shot, wouldn't trying to aim to miss be even harder?
You would think so, yeah.
Like, trying to miss correctly? Like, it's not like, obviously, if you just want to miss, you just, you know, you do what Wade did.
Right.
But you have to, in that situation, you have to miss while also keeping enough time off the clock. And then Jared Wallace admittedly threw an absolutely incredible crossword pass.
Oh, it was a perfect storm of a play. It was just great.
But it really annoyed me because the Celtics had their chance. They had their opportunity to tie it. They drew up a play for Kelly Olynyk at 14 feet.
Why wouldn't you?
And then and Celtics fans are like, he made the last one. I'm like, he's shooting like 36% on the year. Like, no. No. Unless you're trying to tank, and then yes, absolutely. But anyway, so that's why I'm one game under 500 for the weekend. I am at 49-45-3 for the year.
Okay.
Hanging in there. So pretty happy about that.
You're the Rockets right now.
I am. I am very much the Rockets right now. It's pretty – and uneven, don't know what I'm doing, kind of drunk. They were drunk in that Lakers game. I will not – we didn't get a chance to talk about it. They were drunk.
Yeah, that was that was just a weird game.
They were drunk. And Lakers fans, all power to you. Enjoy the victory. The Rockets were drunk. I will not concede this point. All right. The Indiana Pacers are hosting my Memphis Grizzlies tonight. Pacers are 6.5-point favorites at the Fieldhouse.
That's a tricky one. I'll ride with the Pacers until they lose.
If their offense was where it was last year, I wouldn't. But I think they can score enough points. I think that the Memphis defense has been shaky enough outside of the Golden State win that I think that they can get the separation for 6.5. It may take free throws.
Well, even
I can see it being 5 and then fouling.
Yeah, even still, like, I think I just feel like the Memphis offense against that defense, like, it just doesn't seem like a recipe for success to me.
By the way, Memphis, if it's a 9-point, if you're down 9 points and one of you decides then to hit a jump shot 3. I will not be happy. I'd rather you win, but if you're going to lose by 7.
Right.
This one is the one that I love this line. The money line on this is beautiful. Okay? The Sixers are 6.5-point dogs to the Spurs tonight.
Something's up.
The money line's dropped. It wasn't the 300 yesterday. It's -280 for San Antonio, +248 for the Sixers. So the Spurs on a back-to-back – East Coast road trip, double roadie back to back, are in Philly where the Sixers have been a reporter to deal with. 6.5 points.
Something is up. Do we know what happened to Tony Parker last night?
Was he denied at another restaurant?
I don't know. Are there stories about something that happened to, like, that? That's not enough points for me. I'm gonna go.
You want Philly?
No, I'm gonna go Spurs.
I went with Spurs because I couldn't make the call. Because the Spurs I can't trust right now. Every single time I think they're – like against Phoenix, I was like, oh, this is the team that they kill. And then Phoenix took them to the wire. And then against the Knicks, I was like, oh, no. Like the Knicks should be able to hang in this one. And then they destroyed
them. I'm going to instantly regret taking the Spurs, but I'll just go with them.
Yeah. It's a beautiful line. I think any way you bet it, it's a fun bet. Okay, the Bobcats are 2.5-point dogs tonight hosting the Hawks.
I'll roll with the Hawks.
Okay. I'm taking Charlotte. I like how Charlotte's been playing. I think that Knicks loss was, not that bad. I don't know if Jefferson's back yet, but if not, the Hawks defense.
I believe he is slated to play tonight.
Hawks have been on the road forever, too. They've just been on the road a long time. Boston Celtics are favored by 2.5 points at home versus Orlando.
I don't like that either. I'll go Orlando.
Yeah, I went Orlando, too. Look, until Rajon Rondo gets back, the Boston Celtics should not be favored in a single game.
I mean, I get it. It's at home, but I just like this Orlando team too much.
Well, I just started thinking about matchups. I'm like, who do I like better, Kelly Olynyk and Vitor Favorani and Brandon Bass and Chris Humphries, or Nikola Vucevic and Andrew Nicholson? And, is Tobias Harris going to play at any point? It'd be nice if he could get back on the floor.
Yeah, that would be cool if he played. It'd be cool if Jason Maxfield did a sit-up.
Yeah, that'd be good. Avery Bradley versus Jameer Nelson, and then you got Oladipo. Even on the wings, I don't like it. Flalo's been actually playing like himself again.
He's been good.
Yeah.
He's like 20 points a game good, and like a good 20 points.
Like Orlando's suckering me in, because in the beginning, and when we did the over-unders, I was like, nah, they're not going to be good. They're just not good. They know they're not good. And now I'm kind of like, maybe this team's actually okay. They got a lot of talent. They're talented. That's the big difference between Orlando and Boston, is that the Magic have a lot of talent and the Boston Celtics don't have any. So
they're gonna. I want to see them win 30 games this year, just because I want to see your reaction throughout the entire year.
I will blow my gasket. I'll just so awful. Especially if they do with that. If they do with that, if Rondo comes back, I'll be like, all right, Rajon Rondo is that good? That's awesome. Like, I'm glad, because I love Rajon Rondo. But Olynyk is like their third best. No. Ugh. I like this one a lot, too. Okay. The Cavs are in Chicago. It's absolutely a Bulls win, but it's an 8-point line. The Bulls are favored by 8.
I like the Cavs in this, even to maybe win, just because I think that they will play them close. If Derrick Rose starts playing like Derrick Rose again, if he's able to finally come back from his injury, then I like the Bulls to cover. But I just, until I see it, he's just been so awkward this year that I kind of need him to prove it to me. So I like the Cavs to cover, and I even might like them to win.
First matchup between Kyrie and Derrick ever.
Yeah.
Houston is a 7.5-point favorite versus the Raptors. This was 8.5 last night. It's dropped.
I'll go Rockets, but I don't feel good about that. I actually kind of like the Raptors in this matchup, just because I think the Raptors are a team that maybe needs to run a little bit more. I think this style will be good for them.
I think it's a pace differential. That's the thing, is I think that if you normalize them to pace, it's only like a 4-point deficit. But I think the Rockets are going to get up and down the floor. So because the Rockets are probably going to be in a, we're pissed off and we're going to take it out on somebody and you can't shoot.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at some stuff. I'm trying to work it out for a post. I got to find the rest of the stats, but I got this from Raptors HQ that it's really interesting. Basically, it makes sense, but I still find it interesting on the overall aspect. When Rudy Gay and DeMar DeRozan are on the floor, their percentage of the number of shots that are 2-point mid-range shots is just exponential. It's insanely high.
Yeah.
Like, they're not creating easier opportunities for each other.
No.
Denver, the second worst team in basketball, is in Utah, facing the worst team in basketball, the Utah Jazz. Denver is a 2.5-point favorite on the road.
Oh, give me the Jazz. I don't know why. I really don't know why. I really don't know why. I think the Jazz get their first win this year.
Wow.
I have nothing to base that on either. They look so bad.
It's not a bad pick, considering where Denver's been at and the fact that they're shorthanded now. I mean, you're talking about...
Have you seen Jamal Tinsley play this year?
No.
It's really bad. Like, he's shooting, I think, under 30%. He's playing so poorly. Like, he started 5 of their 7 games, and I think he's only averaging 14 minutes a game. He's just they put him out there and they're like, all right, you're out of here. You can't play anymore. You've got to get off the court.
Yeah, Derek, I feel bad for Jazz fans because they've been so decent for so long. I think they knew it was gonna be bad this year, but they've forgotten what being bad feels like.
I thought they would be more competitive than this. I really did. I thought they would lose.
They lost in that one. I was like, oh, nope, that's it.
Yeah,
the tub is empty.
Derek Favors making a shot would help. He's shooting 41%.
Gordon Hayward's all right.
Yeah. Gordon Hayward's been fantastic, and Enes Kanter's been really good. That guy's a good player. He can.
Maybe when they get Burke back, everything will be fine.
That's what I said in Power Tankings today. It was like, they really need a point guard, and they really need him to be good.
This one sounds easy to me, too. I almost wonder if it's a trap. Portland's only giving 4.5 tonight to the Pistons.
Oh.
Now, I like Detroit, but this is the Blazers in the Rose Garden. The Rockets beat them the other night there, but this team is tough as nails in that building.
I'll go with the Blazers, but I don't – yeah, that's a – that's one I don't feel good about either.
It makes you nervous just because of the number.
Yeah.
I'd feel better if it was 6.
Yeah.
And then finally, your Minnesota Timberwolves on a back-to-back in Los Angeles, in the same building, playing the Los Angeles Clippers. Clippers are 6.5-point favorite.
I like that I wasn't even really hedging. I truly believe this, but I was just like, this is, you know, they didn't put the Lakers away early enough last night. They've played more, you know, too many minutes to the starters in this game because of that. You know, I just think this is an improbable win Monday night against the Clippers and, you know, on a back-to-back. And I got a lot of response of, this isn't your typical back-to-back. You know, they're not doing any travel, so that should actually help them a lot. And I thought, and my response was, they're staying in Los Angeles. They are NBA players in Los Angeles for an extra night.
Yep.
I don't trust that. I really don't.
Ricky Rubio is going to be tuckered out for being on the teacups at Disneyland.
Yeah, there's only so much spending you can go through.
Kevin Love's going to have a long day looking at houses for when he's there in a year.
It's exhausting looking for houses.
It is exhausting looking for houses.
Derek Williams is looking for anybody to like him. I actually like the Timberwolves to cover here. I don't think they win, but I think they cover.
Okay, we finally disagree on one. We are all in the same boat except for this one. I'll take the Clippers just because I'm done. I'm done except in extenuating circumstances with taking teams on back-to-back. I did it early in the season because it was, all right, they're fresher. Teams are still – we're still figuring out who's who. In general, though, I'm starting to go towards more of my standard, like, oh, okay, you know, they're less than a 10-point dog on a back-to-back on the road versus a quality team.
Didn't we disagree on Hawks Bobcats?
Oh, we did. That's right.
That J.J. Barea 3-point buzzer to cut it 9-6 at the end of the game tonight is going to piss you off.
God, so much. So much. Maybe Derek Williams. I'm trying to think who else on that team.
Actually, Derek Williams historically has very good games against the Clippers for whatever reason.
Well, who else plays at the end of those games?
Robbie Hummel?
Cunningham. Is Cunningham doing it?
Yeah, Dante could do something. Maybe Alexei Shved will finally do something on the court.
You can't have every Timberwolf be good. Like, you've gotten 2 million. Somebody had to be sacrificed, and Alexi's apparently the guy.
Alexi's the guy. I mean, he did actually – he had a tip-in, so he was at the rim. He had a tip-in last night. That was good. That was a good sign. It was on a fast break, though, I think.
We clap for him. If New York were to lose versus Atlanta tomorrow – all right, well, let me backtrack. What are they right now? They're what, 2-4?
3-4? 2-4? Something like that.
They only won 2, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, 2-4.
2-4. What do they have to get to in order for Dolan to freak out and fire Woodson?
2-8.
2-8?
Okay. Yeah. I think a 5-game losing streak and Woodson's gone.
I think they gotta get to like 3-10.
What would that mean for their schedule to lose the next 4? So they lose at Atlanta, they lose home to the Rockets, home to Atlanta, and then they'd have to lose in Detroit. A loss in Detroit, that'll do it. Mike Woodson will not be on the flight back.
In the Houston game, that's an okay loss.
That would be a fine loss.
They're going to beat the Hawks. One of the two, they're going to beat the Hawks.
This is James Dolan we're talking about. Losing, if they lose badly to the Rockets on national TV, the national TV aspect is big.
Yeah, at home.
Yeah. They should win one of the Hawks games.
Ooh, but you got to look ahead though. I could see them surviving and then it being then in the Indiana game. And then Indiana just humiliates them.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's got to go to 2-9.
Or nationally televised game in MSG. Yeah.
Yeah, because then you've lost three straight nationally televised games.
God, they did their schedule. Look at this. Atlanta, Houston. All right, if we consider Atlanta a playoff team, which I think we both did, we did in the preseason.
Yeah, I still do.
Detroit's like a borderline 50-50 still, I think. They've been pretty good.
Yeah, we said that.
Atlanta, like playoff team, Atlanta, Houston playoff team, Atlanta playoff team, Detroit playoff team, Indiana playoff team, Washington 50-50 playoff team, Portland playoff team, Clippers playoff team. You play a player in Denver, and that's going to be a win. They can just get to then, and then we know that they're going to win.
But, all right, they probably do win in Denver because Denver's that bad, but that's the end of a four-game road trip.
Yep.
That's not a guarantee.
In the altitude, yeah, it's tough. And then they got New Orleans, Brooklyn, Orlando. And then
That's the one.
Brooklyn?
The Brooklyn game. No matter what happens, they lose that game. They could win the next eight games. They lose that game, he's gone.
See, I started getting into my whole, like, what if something crazy happens, like, mode where I'm like, what if they're that bad and then Melo demands out and they trade him to L.A. this season?
No, they would never do that.
How amazing would it be, though?
Oh, it'd be fantastic. I'd be all in on that.
Fire Woodson, bring in Carl. Okay.
Trade Melo.
Trade Melo, bring in Powell. You give him, like...
Give J.R. Smith the rest of his per diem for the year on one night and say, just go have fun, kid. And then you never see him again.
You never see him again. And then the Hangover 4 is trying to go track him down. All right, we should go. But let's see if
we're not
get back on track.
Yeah, we're not overreacting to the Knicks, but that doesn't mean James Dolan won't.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Beth.